This week on Pop of Culture, we rock with the band Lovesick Moan.
To me, all songs are moan, and you could listen to a song in another language and kind of feel what the feeling, what the emotion is.
We'll talk about their inspirations and the Maybell Music Festival.
Later, we'll be scared senseless by a local artist sending spooky work all over the world.
Ooh, and we'll learn about a new youth theater program in Anderson.
Coming up,
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
I'm Kara Duquette, and this is Pop of Culture.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. Coming up this hour, we'll step into the Anderson Main Stage Theater for a new youth education program.
And later, we'll start spooky season with a local haunt. But to start today, we have guests in studio. Set your calendars for the 4th Annual Maybell Music Fest, Saturday, October 5th, 2024, from 2:30 p.m. to 10 p.m., at Elm Street Brewing Company in Muncie, Indiana. This event is free and family-friendly. The Maybell Music Festival celebrates women in music, and today we're joined by one of its organizers and members of Lovesick Moan, who will be performing at the festival. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Will you please introduce yourselves and tell us what you play and your roles in the band?
Sure. I'm Heather. I'm the singer-songwriter, and I play strictly rhythm guitar.
I'm Chad. I play lead guitar and whatever's handy.
What can that entail?
That's been drums. That's been bass. That's been the sound guy.
Nice. And so there's a tradition of moaning in music. Moaning. Can you talk to us a little bit about moaning?
Sure. I describe Lovesick Moan as a original 1960s rock and roll band inspired by previous moaners, including Hank Williams, Howlin' Wolf, and Tiny Tim. And so it's, yes, certainly a tradition. You know, to me, all songs are moan, and you could listen to a song in another language and kind of feel what the feeling, what the emotion is. So we moan.
I feel more like Howlin' Wolf than Tiny Tim myself.
I feel much more like Tiny Tim.
Which makes for a great collab, right?
Right.
It becomes something else.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about its beginnings and like how your sound has evolved, I don't know.
Sure. Lovesick Moan was started in 2020, kind of like a quarantine project. I had recently rekindled a college romance from Ball State,
ooh,
right, 15 years later. And then that fire went out, and I wrote a lot of songs, and I ended up back in Muncie, connected with different musicians I knew. And we started moaning.
Yeah, I came in, you know, at that time, and I've told Heather, well, I'm kind of coming in with one foot in, but she kept writing good songs over and over, giving me plenty of opportunities to do some of what's been my favorite work up to this point. So.
Yeehaw.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your new album?
Sure. So Lovesick Moan's debut album is called Greatest Hits.
Nice.
And it features 10 original songs. They kind of dip into 40s blues, 50s rock and roll, and 60s country across the board. So it's a little bit of 90s alternative in a couple of them. So just hearkening back to our inspirations and our mojo of kind of a deep love for the 1960s culture of music promotion and events and togetherness is really the band's ethos.
Nice. And do you create, I'm just curious if you create your own promo materials.
Yes.
Okay. Because I've seen some posters around. Take a look for them for the Maybell Festival.
Right. They're rather quirky. We recently collaborated with Tribune Showprint. So they do very traditional. I love them. Yes, they're awesome. And they do very traditional 1960s, just like you saw all the great bands. And they're, you know, the America's longest running letterpress. So they also harken back to the 60s culture.
So when you think about your musical influences and where you're going, what do you try to bring something? What is it that you bring to the music that is contemporary, or is that something that you think about?
Sure. We're pretty traditional to probably the 1960s rock and roll format. And I really love, like, Melanie Safka. She played Brand New Key. I got a brand new pair of roller skates. And making music that's family friendly and non-divisive and is up to one's own interpretation.
Yeah, we're not scared to improvise either. So the songs, really, there are portions that play out in real time wherever we're at. So there is something that kind of stays fresh or is open to evolving all the way through.
I love that. Yeah. That spontaneity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to ask, how do you all see yourselves in the context of the Muncie community?
Yeah, I've had about the last decade in just jamming with people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, that plays in well, like I said, with the spontaneity. That it kind of lets us, Heather and I, collaborate with different people in, you know, different capacities, and just to have a good creative energy that moves around.
That's wonderful. So Love Sick Moan is like your vehicle to explore.
That's a word we've used a lot to describe it.
Nice.
Yes. I've been involved with the Muncie music scene for quite a long time, since I was at Ball State. I was in magazine journalism, so I was kind of the music reporter around town for the Ball State Daily News, as well as the magazine. In previous bands, we headlined the local record store day, and then I was involved with Doc's Music Hall, which was a wonderful venue downtown, right next to the Herat. Certainly Maybell, coordinating Maybell and all of the local female musicians. I love Muncie. There's an amazing community here.
Well, you talked a little bit, Heather, about your origins at Ball State. Sure. And so could you talk a little bit more about how the festival came about? What was some of the other inspiration for the festival?
Sure. Ashley Gray and I met at Doc's Music Hall. So we were both redheaded at the time, singer-songwriters in town. Who love music and love playing. And she had an idea for just a female festival. And she contacted me and said, would you do this with me? And I said, of course. And so we named it Maybell. It was, you know, typically going to happen in May. Maybell flowers are in bloom. Mm. Harkens to Mother Maybell Carter, and celebrating the four mothers in music, which includes our favorites, Mother Maybell Carter, Ma Rainey, and Sister Rosetta Tharpe, just to name a few. And so this is our fourth annual Maybell Music Fest, always held in Elm Street. We do a lot of community engagement events. We just had a Maybell jam at the Common Market Juke Joint in July. So that's, very informal. All the gals get together. I want to say at one point there's 16 of us just playing it. And a big thing about Maybell is we love guys. You know, there's chicks and we love guys. So very, wonderful. Very for all. You know, we really support the flowering and flourishing of a healthy, connected society. So Maybell Music Fest is a perfect example of that. I mean, there's such a good vibe. There's no catfighting. You know, we're going to have Petals and Pollen. A lot of female-led and owned vendors will be out there. Petals and Pollen's out of Indianapolis. They have, they'll be selling sunflowers out of a shiny red Volkswagen bus. Ooh. Yeah, so it's going to be fun. And
I'm quite impressed the last couple of years of just how well the stage show and timing went. And I've been running sound. They kind of made my job about as easy as I could imagine. Mm-hmm. Just by supporting each other, really, mm-hmm. I think is what it came down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, festivals are the remedy for the disconnectedness, the isolation. So I'm on the Indiana State Festivals Association Board. We're the music directors for Earth Day Indiana. You know, so togetherness and seeing people smile and eyes blinking and interacting is where it's at.
It sure is. I say every day we are better together because we are.
We are better together.
That collaboration sounds like you're driving some collaborations throughout the area. Throughout the earth.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask you where can we find you on social media too and listen to some things for those who have not yet discovered the magic of Lovesick Moan.
We're on all the streaming platforms. We're on, you know, Instagram and Facebook. But, you know, usually when I'm asked that, I just say live and in person. Find us. Like, listen to the moan. Follow the moan.
Well, that kind of kicks back to why we like posters and printed media, things like that, because we're very interested in the actual local community. And, you know, when this internet fad passes, you know, people will thank us.
Right. Hey, there's nothing like a live concert.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. We want to thank you for being here today. And we'll look out for the Maybelle Festival, October 5th at Elm Street Brewing. And we'll see you around town.
Yeehaw. Wonderful. Yeehaw. Thank you.
Heather Collins and Chad Nordoff are members of Lovesick Moan, who will be performing at the Maybelle Music Festival this Saturday, October 5th in Muncie. We'll hear music from them later on in the show.
The Anderson Mainstage Theater has started a youth theater program for kids as young as 7. IPR's Thomas Ouellette sat down with program director Anna Clark.
So I started here as just a volunteer player. I was involved in shows the past couple years, and now I've been tasked with creating a youth program here based on a grant that we got from Madison County Community Foundation. It's supposed to be for a continuing program that exists year after year. So that's my current role with the theater, but I still like to act from time to time.
And this is the first one of its kind in Anderson, right? Like a specifically youth theater?
As far as I'm aware, there have been other shows that have involved children, and Anderson Main Stage last year did a kids version of Willy Wonka. But as far as I am aware, this is the first time we've had a youth education program like this that is offering continual classes throughout the year.
And so this is like the first one, and you guys plan on doing it as far as long as possible?
As long as there is interest in the community and we've got people willing to educate the upcoming thespians around here, then yes, we'll be here.
So what gave you the idea to start this?
Well, it's been the idea of several people. A lot of the people who volunteer here at Main Stage are teachers themselves. They're passionate about education in general. For me personally, I am a native of the Chicago area, and I grew up in community theater since I was 7 years old. I've been on the stage, and then as I grew up, I, you know, was a camp counselor for a theater program, and then I ended up starting my own nonprofit back in the Chicago suburbs. And when we moved out here, I was just missing it so much. And so many of us feel the same way, that it was an outlet for us as children. And it was a place where we found ourselves and came up in the theater, that we wanted to offer this again to more kids and the youth that's here in town now.
So would you say that this youth theater, it's kind of a unique need in Anderson?
I would definitely say so. I was looking at some of the schools around here, websites, not just Anderson, but Madison County in general, and a couple of them have drama clubs, and a couple of them put on performances here and there. But when I was growing up, I mean, there was fall play, there was drama club, there was the spring musical, there were one acts, there was speech, there was competitive theater, there was show choir. And I'm not necessarily seeing that around the community so much. So we wanted to continue to give opportunities for a place to have a creative outlet like that. And a lot of the schools are doing their best with this too, but it doesn't hurt to have additional outside stuff that's not just school.
Yeah, and so what do you think is important about youth theater, and why is it important to the community?
Oh man, where to start? I really truly believe it is a place to build confidence. First of all, find your people, find your friends, gives you an opportunity to come out of your shell in ways that you might not be able to do in normal social situations. It brings a voice to the quiet. It gives kids a chance to be active, and on top of feeling like they belong in this community. They're learning teamwork. I mean, just as much as they would be if they were on any sports team. Theater is a group effort. You know, they say there's no small parts. Well, there's not. Every single person in the cast has their place here. So I believe it teaches confidence. It teaches connection. It teaches public speaking. There's so much that theater can offer kids that will help them become more well-rounded adults.
Yeah, and so what can a kid expect when they sign up for this?
Okay, so we have two different levels here. Our first group is going to be kids that are probably first grade to maybe fifth, sixth grade, 7 to 11-year-olds. And our intro to theater class for them is going to be focused more on, you know, the foundations of theater. What is upstage? What is downstage? Why does lighting affect movement? We're going to do a lesson on singing. We're going to do a dance lesson 1 week. It is themed weekly lessons with a guest speaker every week, and you will have instructors there that are, you know, your full-time instructors, learn some theater exercises and really get the idea for how being in a show or how being on stage would feel. Now, for our older kids, 12 to 17, we're trying to focus a little bit more on advanced theater technique, where we'll have a little bit more of an intensive dance lesson, but we also like to incorporate cultural aspects of it. We'd like to do one lesson on Commedia dell'arte, which is theater from Italy that mostly focuses on movement and expression in that way, and it's done with masks, and each mask is its own character, and they all have a different way they move. We'd also like to incorporate, you know, stage combat. How do you actually move on stage without putting your hands on someone and making it look real? So there's a lot of different elements of theater that we're trying to incorporate in 6 short weeks, and we're trying to make it as intensive but as fun and interactive as possible.
So will any of these classes involve shows that'll be open to the public to go see?
So that's eventually the goal. This class in the fall is going to be more like a showcase for parents and for, you know, each other in the class. Now, coming this winter, we're hoping to do a musical review or cabaret style songs, where we split the kids into maybe 3 groups and it's led by 3 or 4 instructors. And then the performance that we put on, you know, say early February, will be open to the public if they do want to come see it. Same in the spring. We'd like to do an improv class where we work with members of our improv group here at Main Stage to teach the kids foundations in improvisation, because that really is a key element of theater. If you drop a cue, you need to be able to recover from it. If someone forgets a line, you need to be able to recover from it and think on your feet, and just the show must go on, roll with the punches. And the goal is, when we have this improv camp, that we have some of the adults that we work with on stage with them, and the audience comes, and it's kind of like, whose line is it anyway? Where, you know, audience gets involved in participation. Kids can also get involved in the summer in one of our regular season shows. We're doing Oliver this summer, so we're going to need a lot of kids in Oliver, and that's definitely open to the public to come see.
Yeah, so a lot of this stuff is about, like, I would say, like, variety show kind of stuff, where it's like they get to perform their own stuff. And then, as you said, hopefully this turns into, you know, full productions.
Absolutely. So my goal would be someday, we, you know, right now we have 5 regular season shows. I'm hoping to add a 6th show that is a youth only show. There are so many great shows out there, whether it's a junior version of a musical or a full length musical that really is for kids. For example, the musical 13 is one of my favorites, and really the cast is all 13-year-olds.
Matilda.
Love
Matilda. Well, there's a couple adults in there.
There's
a couple adults, but it's mostly kids.
Absolutely. I mean, Main Stage did Annie a few years ago too, but bringing something like that back, which would probably be more like a, you know, regular season show, Sound of Music needs kids. I mean, musicals need kids. They need that excitement. They need that fresh face, and they need kids who are learning how to do it so they can be the next generation that runs a theater like this, which is all volunteer based.
In addition to the support you've gotten from the Madison County Community Foundation, mm-hmm. what are you seeing from the community, the bigger community at large, as far as support goes for this?
So we've definitely had conversations with people in the community who, like I said, are professional performers or artists or vocal coach or dance teachers themselves, who are very excited to get involved. And then all of our regular season actors and producers and directors have been nothing but supportive in, you know, promoting this course and, you know, saying any way we can help. A lot of parents take for granted that this may just be like, that was a cute little pageant they put on. It is so much more than that, and theater means so much more to people than you realize. The post-show blues is a real thing. It's when a show ends and you've just spent every night of your life for the past 6 to 8 weeks, building something special with people. And then suddenly it's over until the next time. And that hits hard. It still hits me as, you know, a 30-something year old adult. It hit me as an 8-year-old kid. And I think what parents will realize as they get their kids involved in theater is that this is a very meaningful experience. It's not just like a one-off for fun thing.
That was Anderson Main Stage Youth Theater Program Director Anna Clark talking to IPR's Thomas Ouellette.
And just a note, the deadline to register for the youth program at Anderson Main Stage is October 13th. Speaking of the 13th, it's coming up on spooky season. Are you excited about Halloween, Kara?
Oh, yeah. I'm super excited. Actually, last night, my husband and I have an art box in our yard, and we filled it with a spooky display of skulls.
So an art box is what? It's like a little mini museum?
Yeah, it's just a box with a window, and you can put different pieces of art in it, and people can look at it.
Interesting. Yeah. I've never heard of that.
What are you doing?
We don't do much decoration-wise, but a gentleman around the corner from us has one of those 30-foot skeletons climbing over his house. Yes. It's really odd.
I've seen a giant Frankenstein as well.
Yeah. And speaking of Halloween art,
it's the first weekend in October. And that means the ghouls and goblins are coming out. But our co-host, Michelle Kinsey, spoke to an artist who works with them year-round.
Joining me to talk about all things spooky is Brian Blair, a Muncie artist who is the creator of the Scarevania Haunt and owner of Pumpkin Pulp, an art studio that specializes in Halloween masks and props that are used by haunts, movie producers, and lovers of all things creepy worldwide. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with your history, your evolution when it comes to art in Muncie. How did it all begin for you?
Well, I guess I'd say it all started when I was a kid watching Sammy Terry.
Why am I not surprised by that?
Late night horror movies as a kid. And I just kind of grew into a love of all things spooky. And I always had that. And I ended up going to Ball State and actually got a degree in graphic design. Mm-hmm. So I was going to play the safe route. But I like to get my hands dirty.
Yes.
And sitting at a desk all day wasn't quite what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. and I didn't know I could really make a living at doing spooky stuff, but it just took off, so I'm very fortunate.
What was the first kind of in that genre, in that realm of spooky that you did?
It kind of started with, I did Scarevania Haunt, and I didn't have a big budget, really no budget back then, so I decided, hey, I'm going to make my own mask and stuff, and so I made some masks. And I put them online, and I started getting immediately other haunts contacting me going, hey, we want this. How much? Which kind of came at a point in my life. It was like a really bad time. Like we were lost pretty much everything, and I didn't even know what the next step was going to be. But this was just happened at the right time, and Pumpkin Pulp was born, and it just took off like a rocket. So I was very fortunate.
So it kind of sits back. Yep. Scarevania sits back on kind of a gravelly road. You definitely know if you're paying attention to the outside, especially now in the last few years or so, you could definitely tell that spooky things are going on in that building. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like I said, we bought that building and it turned it into Pumpkin Pulp and Scarevania, and everything was great. Pumpkin Pulp just kept growing, but it got to the COVID times hit and it kind of changed everything with the haunt. So we closed the haunt down and I just focused on Pumpkin Pulp. So we did that for a few years. And then I had a guy that works for me was begging me to bring the haunt back. And I thought, you know what? I do miss it.
Yeah.
So, and we were in a better spot. So I had more help and a staff now. So that definitely changed everything.
Yes.
So we brought Scarevania back.
And there are a lot of community members that participate in it as well. You hire a lot of local actors to don the masks and be scary.
Exactly. And that's one of the things too. It's like nobody filled the void when we were gone. So I was like, you know what? I was like, Muncie needs something spooky again, something to do at Halloween time. So I think the community absolutely loved it. We brought it back last year.
Yes.
And, you know, we kept the price cheap. We were only charging $10. And it was really about just getting people out, having a good time on Halloween. And, yeah, we were packed.
Yeah, it was record numbers for you, wasn't it, that year? Yeah.
So this year I'm really excited to see what happens.
Yeah. I will say, full disclosure, I cannot go to Scarevania because I've been there in the daytime, you know, where you could just see all the rooms. And but when I tell you that this place is terrifying, I'm not kidding. Yeah. There it is. I mean, if you love scary things and haunted houses, Scarevania is a must-see for those who can handle it.
Well, it's funny because we get people all the time asking me, it's like, well, can I bring kids? And I'm like, I guess it just depends on what you find scary or what your scare level is there.
Yes, so. And I think mine has, my level has gotten, the bar is lower and lower and lower as I get older. It's just like, I don't want any. But I appreciate the awesomeness of the scary. Well, I just don't want to be scared.
It's always funny too when you get someone going in the haunt and they can't make it and they run out and they're scared and they won't go through. It. It's like it affects the whole line, and everybody goes silently quiet. Like, is it that bad?
And then the talk starts.
Everybody starts falling off. It's funny.
Really?
Oh yeah.
But that's great for you though, because there are so many people that love all things scary. Speaking of all things scary, let's talk a little bit about Pumpkin Pulp, because that has really exploded. Talk about kind of how it started, when it started, and what it is today, and and the work that it's taken to get it here.
It like I said, it started kind of back when we started the haunt. I started making masks, did some trade shows with it after that, and it just started growing, and we started getting, we now supply like all the big haunts in the industry, most of the amusement parks buy our stuff now. So it's exploded big time, which I have a whole staff helping me now, thank goodness.
Yes.
But it's just, it's crazy to see. And like, we have stores wanting to carry our stuff now. So we have stuff in stores, and as far as like Australia, Germany, the UK is a big market for us. We do a lot of stores here in the U.S., like New York City, Abracadabras carries our stuff.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And when we say, and I don't know how you can describe this for listeners, but when you think of a, these are not the masks that, like, let's say we had when we were children, or even, I mean, these are incredibly detailed masks. Talk a little bit about the process.
We make every this. Like I sculpt, the one that sculpts everything for the company. From that, we make molds from it, and most of the mask designs come with, they are highly detailed. They're very dark. I would say one of the things that we stand out from other mask companies, we started, I wanted to make it gritty. I wanted it to look like some psycho made these masks. So everything has a really gritty look to it, and dirty and grimy, and it just, everybody loves it when they see it. And you kind of know you're looking at a Pumpkin Pulp mask when you see it.
Yes.
So you're not going to find it in any of the big box stores kind of thing. It's more of a, I would like to say almost underground, but we're not even underground anymore.
No,
so.
No, but very unique.
Yeah, we started the underground, but now it's kind of blowing up. So,
well, tell me how that makes you feel as an artist, Brian, to, you know, to go from this sculpture that you've tinkered with, you've got it where you want it, and then you're seeing it end up in stores in Australia and the UK. How does that feel as an artist to see that happen for
you? It's incredibly rewarding. And to see people get so excited about Pumpkin Pulp and they see the stuff, and, you know, it's neat when I do the shows and kids are coming up and they're buying it, because I remember being that kid. So, it's an honor. And it's, you know, like I said, I watch some of the, when they do the Halloween shows on the Travel Channel, it's kind of neat because I sit there and go, well, that's ours. So it's neat, you know, to see all that. And
films are using them now.
Yeah,
so you've had some films.
We've got some films starting to pick our stuff up. I'm actually working on some stuff right now. So hopefully getting into some bigger films maybe. So I can't talk about that.
Okay.
But
it's coming.
But yeah, it's coming. And it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, now we've added the Pumpkin Pulp store here in Muncie at our facility. So if you do come to Scarevania, you can go into the Pumpkin Pulp store. And that's crazy looking in there, and everybody loves it when they walk in.
Yes, tell me about the store and what do you offer?
Basically, it's all of our products is in there. So all our masks, the Forevermore dolls have been huge for us. So if you like creepy dolls, definitely a place to go for that.
They're beyond creepy.
Yeah, they are.
There's like creepy dolls,
but they're like a lovable creepy.
Some of them
not
are.
You, but some other people.
Not you, Michelle. No, but I will say that some of them are very cute.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
While still being very creepy.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, the store is really cool. We got all kinds of other stuff in there too. A lot of t-shirts, stuff like that. But yeah, it's got a good creepy feel to the store even when you go in there. I got laughing last year. We had some lady walk in. I was in there and she walked in and she's immediately like, oh no. And I was like, I said, can I help you? And she's like, I was looking for a SpongeBob costume. And I was like, yeah, we don't have that here. And she ran out the door.
Wrong store. Wrong yeah. place. Wrong
Which made me place. Extremely proud. Yeah. I was like, I did it. I wasn't even trying to scare him.
Brian, you've lived in Muncie a long time. And considering the success of your business, you could have picked it all up and left and yep. gone somewhere else to these bigger haunt areas, California, New York, those areas. Why is it important for you to stay in Muncie and do this here in our own backyard?
You know, I'm originally from Indianapolis, but went to Ball State. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just kind of like Muncie. It's more low key. Mm-hmm. Now when I go to Indy, it's like, oh my gosh, there's too many people.
Yeah.
So I like Muncie and I love it here. You know, I've got a wife and kid, mm-hmm. so it was great raising my son here.
Yeah.
And I like the small town feel to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody always said, you need to go to Hollywood, you need to go to Hollywood. But it's a whole different game. What people don't understand, when you go to Hollywood and you're doing stuff for like movies and things like that, it's cool, but you're playing by their rules. Yes. You have to do what they want to do.
Yes.
And here, I'm the boss. I get to say what I want to do. And
they have to come to you.
Exactly.
They're coming to Muncie.
Exactly. And things are different now because, you know, with all the internet and all this stuff, it doesn't matter where you live anymore.
That's true.
I can next day ship anything anywhere. So it's a whole different game.
Yeah. Well, it's a game you're killing. So this has to be your favorite month, October.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what is it about this month that you love so much?
I love everything about it. I love the cooler weather. I love the leaves, pumpkin spice, all that fun stuff. But I love the spooky movies, you know, all the channels are playing the scary stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, I've always had a love for Halloween. I just always loved it. It's like one of those, it's a holiday. I think anybody can celebrate Halloween how they want. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends on whatever you want to do. If you want to go trick-or-treating or if you want to just sit home and, you know, eat junk food and watch scary movies.
Yeah.
You know, there's no pressure. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So it's a fun holiday.
But not many people get to live Halloween 365 days a year like you do, Brian.
No. And that's what it's funny because everybody always asks me, it's like, will you do this year round? And I'm like, yeah. It's like, it's gotten to the point now. It's like November 1st. I'm kind of like the mayor on Nightmare Before Christmas. Only have 365 more days till Halloween. And I'm running around because we got to start making the new line. But all of our shows are like the beginning of the year, the big trade shows. Mm-hmm. So we have to make all the new stuff for the new season. And, you know, it's immediately jump right back into it. And I hate it. No, I don't.
I was gonna say, I don't think
it's the best job ever.
I know it is. Well, tell us again, what are the hours and the operating hours and days for Scarevania and Punk and Pulp?
Scarevania is open every Friday and Saturday night in October, usually from like 8 to, I think, ticket booths open until 11, but we run people until they're done. The store, Pumpkin Pulp store, is open during the same time. Mm-hmm. And the Pumpkin Pulp store is also open through the week from like noon to 5.
Oh, okay.
So, and then of course, we got the website, pumpkinpulp.com. You can order anytime on that.
Yeah.
So it's open 365 days a year.
Yeah. Brian, thank you so much
for taking
the time during this super busy month
to
tell us about all the things spooky you have going on with
Pumpkin Pulp
and Scarevania.
I appreciate you having me. And I'm going to give you free tickets to Scarevania. Make you come.
No, but and I will be giving those to Luke. Our producer Luke will go in my place. No, and he's shaking his head no.
Why is everybody shaking their head no?
Absolutely not. Thank you. That was perfect.
It's Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Kara Duquette. Earlier in the show, we spoke to the band Lovesick Moan. While they were in studio, we asked them about their just-released album for our segment. Weiwo, what are you working on?
So we've released our greatest hits album, Lovesick Moan's greatest hits album, which features 10 original songs inspired by 40s blues, 50s rock and roll, and 60s country. We recorded at Postal Recording in Indianapolis, really neat studio. Again, this was during 2020, so it was certainly a quarantine project. We recorded on tape, very traditional format, all live at the simultaneously at the same time, much like they would have done in the 60s. We had a wonderful time there.
So a lot of the songs were just one take. There are maybe a couple of parts across the record where I went back and fixed a solo or something, but for the most part, it was all just played in the room.
Well, can you talk to us today about a particular song track?
Sure. Rumblin' Thunderstorm Blues. It's kind of about weathering the storm. You know, it starts off, tell me what you're going to say. Tell me what you're going to do. I ain't mad at you. You know, my mind's still bright and sunny. So weathering the storms of life, which there certainly are a lot of storms, but there's a lot of sunshine too.
I think we can all relate to that.
It's kind of a stormy sounding track too. It's got its own ups and downs.
Yeah. The vibe is stormy throughout.
Yes.
Okay.
So it talks about, you know, my mind's still bright and sunny, though I've seen a dark cloud or two kind of passing by. So to me, it harkens to, I practice transcendental meditation. So it's one of the most researched meditation techniques. There's an instructor here in town. Her name's Vicki Peterson, wife of Dr. John Peterson, who launched Doc's Music Hall. And it's Ayurvedic. So most famously, the Beatles, when they went to India, met with the Maharishi, and that's the root of transcendental meditation. It was really popular in like the 60s, 70s. But the whole concept is letting the thoughts just pass by, kind of like a cloud or a thunderstorm, and just letting them go, and still being at peace. So, you know, my mind's still bright and sunny.
I take her word for that. I get to play loud rock guitar.
Well, I can relate to what you're saying completely because I like to do that myself. And I put my thoughts on a leaf and float them down the White River, you know.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yes. Yes. So that's the Rumbling Thunderstorm Blues. I mean, when you hear that thunder clap and roar, when that rain comes knocking at your door, I'm mad at you, honey.
Okay, let's listen to Lovesick Moan's Rumbling Thunderstorm Blues.
From those rumbling thunderstorm blues.
Are you ready for the arts calendar?
I am. It's the good stuff.
All right, let's jump right in with First Friday in Anderson, which is October 5th. Check out a craft market, browse new exhibits at the A-Town Center, the Anderson Artist Alley, and the Anderson Museum of Art, and more from 5 to 8 p.m. October 5th.
Did you know Levi Rinker gave us the scoop that the A-Town Center was named for A-Town, which is what people in Anderson call
it? Call it. They Anderson. Call it A-Town, our friends in A-Town. Excellent.
The 43rd annual 4th Street Fair is happening Saturday and Sunday, October 5th and 6th in Richmond. This event will include dozens of vendors, two food courts, live music, a kids zone, and more.
Is that our town? Richmond is our town.
It could right. be.
Harvest Nights in Newfields in Indianapolis are happening now through November 2nd. The spooky, not scary, underline, not scary, spectacle returns to the garden at Newfields for the fifth season of Fall Fun. Get ready to experience the revitalized spectacle at Mischief Manor, featuring glowing gourds galore alongside your friendly favorite spirits, the Three Graces. Journey through fog-filled forest along the pumpkin path of peril and feel the ghost train rumble beneath your feet, all the while taking in tens of thousands of pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns. That sounds like a blast.
Sure does.
Find out more at discovernewfields.org.
Get ready for spooktacular fun at the Indianapolis Zoo's Halloween Zoo Boo through October 31st. Visit Pumpkin Town for family-friendly activities, tricks, and magic. Then navigate the Mirror Maze, create potions, tour the forest and Gator Pirate Bayou, see lights and frights, taste ghoulish goodies, and much more. IndianapolisZoo.com.
Man, this is the time for ghouls and pirates and graces and all kinds of things.
Spooktacular.
The Gas City Performing Arts Center is now open on Friday, October 4th. Get ready for a classic rock experience featuring the music of Queen, Pink Floyd, Styx, Led Zeppelin, and more. Sounds like my kind of time. GasCityPAC.com is the place to go for more info.
The Human Library will be open at Oakhurst Gardens at Mina Trista Sunday, October 6th from 1 to 4 p.m. This event offers an opportunity to learn more about diverse populations through conversations with persons who have lived experiences of stereotyping, biases, and prejudice. At the Human Library, you will borrow a human book and have a conversation with the book about their story. You will have the opportunity to unjudge someone, ask questions, possibly learn something new, and likely talk to someone you would normally not have the opportunity to meet otherwise in a safe space. You can come to read one book or stay to read two or three. Final checkout is at 3:30 p.m.
I love that idea, and that event is incredible. All right, a note from in-house. IPR will hold open auditions for this year's radio drama, A Chris Mystery 2, The Case of the Missing Mrs., ooh, written by our friend Michael Kleberg. Auditions are October 28th and 29th here at the station. We're looking for all kinds of voices. Find the full list at indianapublicradio.org/community. It's my favorite event of the year.
So fun.
Everybody should come out and join us.
You should come out. It's a fun time. And while you're on indianapublicradio.org, tell us about your event by heading to the Pop of Culture page.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, who says we're not allowed to make any jokes about his lovesick moaning. Our arts calendar was written by Michelle Kinsey, and this week was hosted by me, Jen Blackmer.
And me, Kara Duquette. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University.